Welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 545. I'm Tom Cagley, your host. In the Spamcast 545, we have an interview with Cheryl Hammond, Jenny Tarwater, Faye Thompson, and Linda Potter. We talked about launching new voices, women in Agile, planned activities at Agile 2019, and more. There is a lot of good advice and ideas if you're new to speaking or if you're a seasoned speaker. There is a call to action at the end of the interview. The bio of the panel, Cheryl Hammond, has a couple of decades experience as a software leader in private and public sectors. She ran her team's successful adoption of Scrumbon for a mission-critical regulatory compliance project under multi-agency state and federal government oversight, mentored former COBOL devs into true believing, unit testing XP evangelists, and turned a threatened software product at risk of litigation into a lean, revenue-generating flagship offering in 9 months, all of which leads her to believe that anything is possible. She is not sorry for her many biases, including strong preferences for servant-style leadership and a team-based, holistic, problem-solving, and strong aversion to agile zealotry. Whether consulting or in-house, Cheryl endeavors to make life suck less for software delivery organizations and the humans who inhabit them. Faye Thompson. With more than 20 years of project delivery experience, Faye Thompson is a consultant, coach, and scrum master with a focus on an agile mindset and continuous improvement. Faye has a positive impact on financial services, healthcare, advertising, automotive, and aviation industries. Passionate about innovative solutions to drive business value, she supports work groups as they transform themselves into highly engaged and energized teams. Faye enjoys serving on the board of directors for the Central Ohio Agile Association and as president of the Women in STEM Alumni Society of The Ohio State University. She spends her free time volunteering as an emergency medical responder and public affairs coordinator for the Red Cross. Jenny Tarwater is an international speaker, agile coach, and trainer local to the Kansas City, Missouri area. Jenny has over 23 years of corporate experience bringing business teams, technical teams, and sponsors together to reliably deliver large-scale development projects. With her disciplined approach to cultivating success and growth in people, process, and products, Jenny has a passion for driving the adoption and understanding of agile values, principles, and practices, and her endless motivation drives her involvement in cultivating the small company startup culture across organizations large and small. Jenny is a kinetic leader, partner, and consummate student who brings enthusiasm and awareness to projects and keeps teams focused and delivering success in rapidly evolving and dynamic environments. Linda Potter. Linda is a passionate learner and experienced scrum master at Highland Software in Westlake, Ohio. She was instrumental in helping launch Highland's first SAFe implementation and continues to work with additional SAFe programs as they launch. Linda loves encouraging her teams to explore, innovate, and celebrate their failures just as much as successes. She is also passionate about empowering her teams to achieve technical excellence through agile engineering practices. Outside of work, she loves to game with her family and take pictures of her fluffy black cats. Are you ready to launch new voices and discuss women in agile? It's time for the interview. Jenny Tarwater, Faye Thompson, Cheryl Hammond to be later, and Linda Potter. Welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
I am very excited. You all are, you know, part of a movement within the Agile community, women in Agile and launching new voices. And I think the listeners would really like to hear basically what is all of this stuff, what it's about, and the value you perceive it bringing, these programs bringing to the agile world specifically, but in the whole IT world in general. So why don't we start with the idea of launching new voices? What is it and what's the value?
Yeah, I'd like to answer that. This is Jenny. And the Launching New Voices program was something that we created in 2017 as part of the Women in Agile conference that is just prior to the Agile Alliance conference. And the year previous to that, a group of us were talking about the representation on the speaker list at Agile Alliance in that program. And we wondered if there was a way to help underrepresented groups find a track to get more underrepresented groups onto that program. And so one of the thoughts that we had was for folks like me at the time, I said, I wouldn't even know where to start, right? Even if I had the desire to be a speaker, I had an idea that I wanted to share. How do you do a submission? How do you put a talk together? And how do you practice that, right? And so what we did was we created the Launching New Voices program, thinking that this would be an instructional part of the Women in Agile conference. And instead of that, we said, well, why don't we actually get three new speakers on stage, pair them with mentors that can guide them through that whole process, and then give them an international audience at the event. And so we did that for the first time in 2017. We took submissions for speakers. We paired them with mentors that we knew had experience giving that level of conference talk. We did limit it and say it would be a 7-minute talk, but we did everything we could to set them up for success.
How'd it go?
It was amazing. It was goosebumps in the room. Awesome. We had three amazing speakers that were paired with three amazing mentors. I mean, of course, everybody was thrilled to see these new voices up there succeeding. But I think a little bit of a surprise to everybody was how relevant and awesome the information was and how useful it was to everybody in the room.
What do you define new voices as?
Right. Well, so when we accept submissions, and later on we'll tell you how to get to the submission form, we understand that these are not folks that have submitted to a ton of conferences and have necessarily a well-formed abstract. We want somebody that has a passion about a topic, right? We look at folks that have not been compensated for a talk, and we consider things like free admission to a conference, a compensation. We look at the size of audience that they presented to, and this gets really interesting because we see some folks that when they talk about the audiences that they have presented in front of, there are folks that may have presented in, say, like a school or church setting, but not in a professional setting. And so recognizing that there may be some difference in those is important. So the new voices, we're looking for somebody that has a passion about a message, someone that has not had an opportunity to speak from a national stage in front of a large audience, and somebody that's willing to share their story afterwards via like a blog post or perhaps even a podcast.
This is a relatively new program. What is it that you've learned in the first iteration or two of it that informs what you're doing in 2019?
Well, for that, I'd kind of like to ask the mentor that's representing the mentors on this call, Faye, because from my perspective, so I'm part of the program team. I'm part of the group of folks that put the submission process in place, review the submissions, make some selections, pair with mentors and such. But what I keep hearing from the mentors from the last 2 years is, that's a little bit surprising, is people really have a story to tell. It's just, how do you tell that in an engaging, memorable way to an audience that requires a little bit more effort than, you know, what a lot of us do is present information to people in a business setting, right? So there's this difference about getting up on the stage. And that's where I think our mentors have really been helpful, not in helping craft what that story and what that message is, but helping those presenters find that story in themselves.
So Faye, what's it like to be a mentor, and what have you learned over the years of being a mentor that informs what we're going to do in the future?
Right. I'm glad you couched it that way, because I did feel like I learned a lot as well. So that's why I really enjoyed participating. But yeah, to piggyback on what Jenny just said, that I think is the key differentiator to support our proteges as they are finding their story. I think a lot of times when you're newer to speaking, you, as Jenny said, you think, I have all this information I need to present. And sometimes the personal aspect of it, or why you were passionate about it in the first place, can get lost. So as mentors, it can be really helpful if we make sure that they're not overlooking what their original passion was and their personal connection to it, because it's that personal story that is the differentiator. It's the personal story that is going to resonate with someone in the audience, because everyone sitting out there has some kind of similar experience, and they want to hear from the speaker how they relate. So supporting them as they question that, and make sure that they highlight that in their presentation.
So how do you actually work with somebody? I've had friends that have gone through the Moth program and been mentored through building a story and going through that whole process. What is it that a mentor does in terms of sort of the technical blocking and tackling to bring somebody up to stand on a stage and not run from terror kind of thing?
Well, the approach I like to take is just to get to know them, to start off with, and get to know a little bit more about why they submitted the topic they did, why they wanted to talk about that, and to gather stories around why that topic was important to them, and to figure out how to make sure that that story gets interleaved into the data or the information that is shared. So in my experience as a mentor, we met several times. We met remotely over Zoom. I know some people are a little bit closer in proximity and think they've met in person, but we met remotely and talked through the protege story and the new voices story, and talked about some details that they might want to include. A lot of it really was coaching and just reflecting back to the speaker, maybe subtle little details that they didn't think that were important, or that didn't necessarily jump out at them, but reflect back and say, hey, it seems like you got a spark when you talked about that detail. Have you thought about including that? And then from there, we met, I think we probably met 3 to 4 times from the time my protege had been selected until the conference. Each time was an iteration of their talk, and just kind of buffing that up until they felt comfortable with it.
7 minutes is not a long time.
It is not. That's good and bad. You have to have your message pretty well defined, but it's also, I don't feel it's feel that it's less terrifying for people to prepare for, especially if it's their very first talk. It's a little less intimidating, I think, to think, I'm just going to talk about this thing that I really care about for 7 minutes.
Have you seen the people that have gone through this program speak again somewhere else?
I know that we've had many, if not all, have gone on to give their talk or an expanded version of their talk somewhere else. So a lot of what happens in a 7-minute talk too, that can be almost just like a little nugget that gets expanded out into a larger talk. So it's great for especially first time or early speakers to sort of share this almost lightning talk, but share this little nugget. And they do it at the Women in Agile Conference, which there is not a more supportive audience. Everyone there wants them to succeed. So, and then from there, they get feedback. So they can take that feedback and use that to craft a longer talk that could be presented in another conference.
So I wonder what it would be like to actually be a new voice.
Well, Tom, let me tell you about it. I had a great experience being a new voice. It was 2017. I was paired with a mentor, Lynn Winterbore. And I think Faye and Jenny touched on a couple of key things, right? Like many times the mentors will say, well, we didn't really do anything. You know, we were just there for you and you had the idea and you took it forward. But that support of someone that has been there and done that is so like monumental. She helped me recognize basically like a better way to deliver my story so that more people would be receptive to hearing my passion and what I was doing with my teams at the time. So I was able to take that. And as Faye mentioned, I spoke at two additional conferences after that, and it was an extension of that talk. And to be able to take some of those pointers that Lynn gave me to the extended talk was really helpful. But I think beyond speaking, which of course is what we're doing this for to begin with, to get our foot in the door as a speaker, I took away tips and tricks to being a better mentor from Lynn and from, you know, working with some of these women like we have here today. And it's been really instrumental in like how I'm expanding my own career and helping my peers around me. So it's been a great journey so far.
So why do we have to go down this path of having a group help new voices break in? Why can't they break in without help?
Our thought here is that there's a lot that goes into preparing a talk for that size of an audience. And of course, part of it is how do you put your talk together? But there's how do you put your slides together? What is the body language like? How do you handle the nerves that you have the day of the talk? How do you handle the inevitable feedback, both good and bad, afterwards? And so, you know, there's definitely, you know, an art and a science to this, and putting you with a mentor that has been through that is a great way for folks to get some perspective on things that they wouldn't even know to ask about.
Yeah. And also, you know, sort of like what Jenny was saying, right? Like the preparation, what goes into delivering a talk like this, but then also, I don't think so much that a new voice couldn't particularly break through without having this sort of experience. It's just that you get that insight from someone that's done it before so that you can prepare like an abstract and prepare a submission in a way that you may not have been able to had you not had this experience. So it gives you like a leg up.
I see the leg up. I also suggest that there probably is some form of systemic bias in the system that requires extra force to help people break through. I'll be honest with you. Over the years, I've gone back and actually counted the number of new voices, whether it's women or just people that hadn't published 6 or 7 books. And the answer is that until the last couple of years, I think I personally failed on that account. So I do think that unless there is something that moves the needle, it is really easy to be fat, dumb, and happy and just go for people that you know will stuff the audience. I've managed conferences before, and butts in seats are a big deal. New people are a hard sell, right? So I do think there is some sort of systemic bias in the system that keeps people out, and therefore they don't get all of that practice.
Yeah.
I like that you call it out as systemic as well, because it's a cycle, right? So if on one side, and I get it too, I help organize conferences, you are going for the butts in seats and recognized personalities. When you're in the audience and you're on that other side, you're going to see that regularly and say, oh, it doesn't look like they want someone like me, because it's always the personalities. It's never the new voices. So I'm going to be less inclined to even try, because it just doesn't seem like I'm the one you're looking for. So by putting this out there and saying, no, we're absolutely looking for new voices, it's almost like putting a stake in the ground and saying, this is so important to us that we get fresh representation, we get fresh perspectives. And to the point where, you know, we're actually, I know that the selection committee has even said no to people in the past because they have even just a little bit of experience. And they've been down the road even just a little bit. This really is for very fresh perspectives.
I'd love to jump in on that as well. Hi, Cheryl here. And suggest that one of the benefits that speakers get from participating in the New Voices is they also get exposure to the community of speakers and build relationships with people who are well networked in the conference community, so that it's not just the information that the mentors are imparting, it's the building of those relationships and the confidence that comes with that. So knowing people who serve on conference committees like Faye, and knowing how to have an informal chat with that person and say, what kinds of speakers are you looking for? What kind of talk could I give? And having your name be known by the people in the community. The folks who come to Women in Agile are a self-selected group that are very involved in the health of the community. So if you've been a New Voices speaker at Women in Agile, you now have some exposure and some recognition that also confers benefits. So I would say, like, we, especially in Women in Agile, I think we really rely on the support of our networks, and it assists us in building that. Linda is someone now that I come across all the time on the conference circuit. I'm a track chair. I see her name in all kinds of things, and I'm recognizing, oh, yes, this is someone who got her start in our New Voices program, and look at what she's doing now. Right. So it's really exciting to be able to see that as an additional accelerator.
Is it truly an accelerator, or there are times when I suspect that people in our industry are our own worst enemies, right? So it's easy to say, hey, somebody's chasing me. I will, I just have to run faster than them. The old bad joke about the bear, right? How much of that happens, or is this truly altruistic?
I think from our perspective, a rising tide lifts all boats. So for us, if there are more women visible in conferences and showing great success, and it becomes just the norm that you see lots of women speaking at conferences, it paves the way for all the other new women that have not had that experience to have it just that much easier for them to break in. Certainly, I've been on the conference circuit a relatively short time, and I know in the years prior to me entering the speaker circuit, there were even fewer women, and it was even more daunting for me to think about becoming a speaker. And I think now we see folks entering in much greater numbers.
So all of this is wrapped inside of the Women in Agile conference or sub-conference within the larger Agile conference. How does that work, and what is Women in Agile? I'd be interesting to hear your explanation of that, given that I've had someone else on that explained that last year. We can do, you know, put those two podcasts up side by side.
Right, and it'll be different. So
good.
I'm fortunate to be co-chairing the conference this year with Natalie Warnert, and I think that Natalie and I would both want to say that Women in Agile is definitely bigger than just a pre-conference session at the Big Agile Conference. There is a nonprofit, Women in Agile, that is sponsoring events all over the country and I think the world. There are other smaller Women in Agile conferences in addition to the one that we hold together with the Agile Alliance at the main conference in August. So we're supporting a lot of activities throughout the year. Our flagship is always going to be the pre-conference session at the main Agile conference. It's a great way to take advantage of the great thought leaders that are present for the main conference in the first place. So of course, it's, you know, that conference is the half day session, the Sunday prior to the Agile Alliance, Agile 2019 this year conference. I don't know what else, you know, the idea, one of the things that I'm interested in exploring is when we first established the Women in Agile, or reestablished the Women in Agile Affinity Group, which was some years ago, and got off the ground with this pre-conference, we were very focused on the experiences of women. And as the years have gone on and the conference has become more popularized, one of the things that we noticed last year was that we asked attendees to self-report their gender on the registration form because we want to understand how many women we're serving and how many men are allies and supporting us. But we noticed that there wasn't an other on the form. And we corrected that last year because we're starting to recognize we want to expand our view to include folks of, you know, not the binary genders. And so what does that mean for the fact that we are women in Agile? What does it mean that there's still so much work to be done to support people of color in the Agile community? And that doesn't necessarily fall under the umbrella of women, but for those of us that are particularly interested in inclusiveness, it's a question that would naturally come up. I don't want us to be considered white women in Agile. I want us to be something that's a larger umbrella that says, what are we doing to make the Agile community more inclusive for anybody whose voice isn't currently being heard? We do have some spectacular women of color that participate in our community, and that I think those numbers are growing, but they're still very small. And I think there's a lot of work for us to do there to really work on the intersectionality of our community and make it more, you know, even more a welcoming space or an on-ramp for people to get into the main community.
Do you see those two things as overlapped, or is this just a subsection, or are they a Venn diagram?
I would illustrate with a story of how things went for us, I think, last year and the year before. The wonderful thing about having the Women in Agile Conference be a pre-session that kicks off the main Agile Conference is that we start conversations that drive throughout the week at the main conference. And that was especially evident last year when we had a number of the main Agile Conference hosts a track called Audacious Salon, where they're doing several of the larger sessions are on issues of inclusiveness. And what I found during the hallway conference and talking with a lot of the thought leaders, whether they were present at the Women in Agile conference or not, was that questions of who's included, who has a voice, who's driving the conversation, are we expecting new voices to come in and fit seamlessly into the way we already talk, or are we looking to them to provide a new perspective and expand the topics that we discuss? Like, those topics were just bubbling up everywhere in the lunchroom, in the coffee line, and at numbers of sessions that maybe weren't explicitly about that in the first place, but were really starting conversations that went a lot deeper. We had great stuff happening in some of the keynotes and after the keynotes. And so I really felt a sense that we had, I don't know, infiltrated, right? That we had, you know, we were starting something that once it caught fire on that Sunday afternoon, it continued to burn throughout the week and really had a positive impact on all kinds of people who didn't think they were coming to Agile 2018 looking for that topic, but it was there. And I think that's a real strength of the fact that we're early and that we have the opportunity to really shape how the rest of the week unfolds.
So what is the sense of the rest of the panel here in terms of how it affected the rest of the conference?
Yeah, I would reiterate that. I've seen that happen many times where a conversation that starts on that Sunday afternoon, as everyone is prepping themselves, their minds for learning for the week, those conversations start there and they surface and resurface and get interwoven into many different conversations that happen throughout the week. I know I've been maybe participating in a small group discussion at the Women in Agile conference with someone at a round table and I had never met them before. And then I see them again throughout the week and we talk about sessions we've attended and how our initial conversation sparked questions in subsequent conversations. So it's really interesting to see how those things do kind of percolate all throughout the conference.
If I could too, I would like to add, so the question that you just posed was, how do you see that affect the rest of the conference? And I would like to talk a little bit about what I saw even a few months after the conference at a different conference. And I'm not going to use names here because that's not important, but I was at an open space event and I walked into this space and I saw that there were 30 men in a session and not a single female. And it just made me very curious about how that came to be. So because the person that had convened that session was an ally that was present at the Women in Agile conference, pre-conference, I had a conversation with them and they said, well, you know, people self-select. there's nothing I did here. And so, but we had an open dialogue and realized that even the title of the open space session seemed to be directed toward a certain group and not open that up to folks that may be interested in it, right? Kind of like, if you're not the expert here, don't attend. And so, you know, I'm happy to say that that particular person was very open to that feedback, which I might not have even given them if I hadn't seen them already be willing to be an ally, and subsequently has taken enormous steps to be more inclusive in the way that they invite folks.
So I think I would echo both what Faye and Jenny said. Like personally, I saw sort of throughout the whole week topics that I had started sort of fan out to the rest of the conference, where I ended up having conversations with people that hadn't even been in the room with me on the Sunday that we had the conference. They just had heard about a topic that I was spearheading and really passionate about and found me at the conference to continue the conversation. So like personally, I got a lot of sort of guidance and help on those particular topics that I was really interested in, even from people that hadn't attended. But then not only throughout the conference, but after the conference, I think the importance of those allies that attended was really evident. I think it was Chris Merman did a blog post, right? Was that him? Yeah, thanks, Jenny. And it was about being an ally. It's a great read. But even outside of the conference, someone at my work read that, and he was, it like opened his eyes, so that we are still gaining allies, whether it's, you know, within the conference or outside of it.
This year? So when does Women in Agile and the whole New Voices thing happen this year, and what's on the docket?
Great question. I'm very excited to answer that. So the Women in Agile pre-conference, hang on, I'm bringing up the calendar to make sure I have the right date. Yep, it is Sunday, August 4th, and runs from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. So if folks are coming for Agile 2019, all they need to do is book a slightly earlier flight. Don't need an extra hotel night. Just get there early enough on Sunday. We were happy to have a reminder on the registration form this year that says, book your flight early. I am super duper excited about our keynote speaker this year. That's what we'll kick off with. We're going to be having a, we try to look for women to come and speak to us to come from outside of the Agile community, because when those of us that are deeply invested in the Agile community tend to see the same speakers over and over again. And the idea is to really bring in ideas from other industries. So this year, our keynote speaker's name is Stephanie Thomas. She's the founder of an organization called Curatable. And I found her in a Vox article explaining the work that she does. She has disabilities and created not a fashion line, but something called a fashion design system that helps other fashion designers and clothing makers create clothing that is safe and functional and stylish for people with a wide variety of disabilities, because the idea is that your appearance is your access to career and success and to just acceptance in society. And people with different physical abilities and different body styles all deserve to look and feel great with the clothing that they need that works for their abilities. And so she's created this very insightful system. And when I read the article, I saw a lot of parallels between the work that we do in software, for example, in user-centered design, where we're really focused on understanding and getting rapid feedback cycles from the users that are going to be working with our software. I was really privileged to be able to get Stephanie on the phone and chat with her about what this conference is and why we wanted her to come speak at it. And when I talked about the rapid feedback cycles and working directly with the affected users, she got so excited and said, this sounds exactly like there's just this great synergy between the way she thinks and the work that we do. To the point where she started asking me questions about, well, what's on the agenda for the rest of the day? That needs me to explain the rest of the day. So we have our great keynote speaker. For the remainder of the day, we'll have an open space / lean coffee format. We do that every year so that it allows our 300 attendees a chance to mingle with each other, a chance to self-select on the topics that are the most important to them to discuss. It really helps us crowdsource the content of the conference so that we're getting the best ideas from the people who attend. So we start with the opening keynote, we move into an open space, we conclude with the awesome Launching New Voices speakers that we've talked about already. And when I mentioned this to Stephanie on the phone, she said, I am so psyched about all of this and I want to be in and I'm going to participate in the open space as well as the keynote. So I'm not going to come in and speak and leave. I'm actually going to stay. I'd like to join the community and hear from all of you. So we are really, really lucky to have her. I'm excited about what we're going to be able to do together.
As we wrap up this evening, what message would each one of you like to give the listeners of the Software Process and Measurement Cast, just spread across the globe? What message would you like to give them so that they, at the end here, take something away?
I think I would like to say, if you have a topic that you are passionate about, even if you don't know how to present it as a conference talk, submit anyways, because of the great ability to have a mentor help you flush that out.
Faye, Cheryl?
Yeah, I would add to that. Again, this is the most supportive audience. They really want everyone to succeed, and they're excited to hear about your passion. I many people here have heard me say this before, but for anyone who is hesitant at all or thinks maybe they don't have a message to share, you are the expert of your experience. No one is a greater expert on your own experience than you. And someone in that audience needs to hear what you have to say. They need to hear about your experiences. So participate in the program and we can just help you get ready to share those experiences.
I think I have a shout out for the allies. I want allies to understand that the very best way you can support women in Agile is to find women and help elevate them to have their own voice and share their own story. We absolutely appreciate the allies who want to speak on our behalf, but the best way to get those messages out is to let us tell them ourselves. Let us do it our way. I would add to that a shout out to us women in Agile. We can be better allies for women of color and people of color and other marginalized groups by doing the same for them, by allowing them to tell their stories, by elevating them and making their presence central instead of our own.
Excellent. Okay, I'm going to be very tactical with my message and talk about the call to action that we were hoping that your listeners will take action on. First of all, if you are interested in being a protege, we have a submission form that you can get to from the Agile Alliance site, looking at upcoming conferences, but I'm sure that link will be in the show notes as well. We are accepting those submissions through 5/10. Again, we're not looking for a seasoned abstract here. Just tell us what you're passionate about. We are also looking for mentors. So we've had fantastic mentors in the past, two that are on this call, Faye and Cheryl, but we've also had Lynn Winterberg and Laura Powers, Ryan Ripley, Llewellyn Falco. We really want mentors that are willing to spend some time with these protégés and share the knowledge that they have with them. That being said, and as excited as when the deadline for that is 5/10 also with the same link that we'll share. That all being said, although I'm extremely excited for this particular Women in Agile pre-conference, there is nothing that says that you can't look for this same type of encouragement in your own local community or starting something else. I'm a conference organizer here in Kansas City, and we're doing our own Launching New Voices program this year. One of the things that I love about Agile is that it can be decentralized. So if you have an interest in doing something like this in your own community, please reach out for advice, but just do it.
I want to thank Linda Potter, Jenny Tarwater, Faye Thompson, and Cheryl Hammond for visiting the Software Process and Measurement Cast. I look forward to hearing how this all goes. And again, we'll revisit this perhaps next year. In Reread Saturday News, we continue the reread of Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. This week, we tackle Chapter 2. Chapter 2 tackles the relationship between effort, attention, and thinking slow. Thinking slow, System 2 thinking, requires effort. That effort must be marshaled and directed, which requires attention. The more effort needed, the more attention needed. Attention is a finite resource. Therefore, the more we spend on System 2 thinking, the less attention available for everything else. A word of warning, don't do higher math while driving. Remember, if you don't have your favorite copy of Thinking Fast and Slow, buy a copy and read along. Link in the show notes if you want to support both the author and the podcast. In the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 546, we will feature our interview with Michael Malutis. Michael and I talked about putting people back in charge of their careers. Michael provides advice that every listener can put to use immediately and in the long run. If process improvement is a never-ending journey, why do so many people ask, are we there yet?